From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to this remarkable program called Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, a two-parter with Stephen Quayle. First half of the program, world tensions, followed up by some of Steve's investigations into giants. The siblings of a worker trampled to death by Walmart shoppers looking for Black Friday bargains. Well, they filed a lawsuit against the retailer and the shopping center. His sisters and brother filed the wrongful death suit, according to their attorney. Named to the suit are Walmart, Green Acres Mall in Nassau County, New York, Vornado Realty Trust, and Serata Security Services in the USA. A 6'5", 270-pound temporary worker was asphyxiated at the Walmart store in Valley Stream, New York, Friday morning, while trying to shield a pregnant shopper from the pushing of bargain hunters as they shoved their way in. Dr. Clark McPhail from the University of Illinois is an expert in social movements. I had an opportunity to talk with him about this case.
I'm not sure I would use that language to describe what I've read about in the newspaper, if you're talking about the Walmart incident. People are there to obtain some kind of good or service. They have that kind of objective in mind. And when there's a scarce kind of commodity or service, the smart providers of those services or scarce commodities will try to manage it in some way. That's the reason we have queues at grocery stores and queues in banks. And it's the reason that Disneyland has a kind of labyrinth arrangement through which you are queuing up to gain access. It's like what you find in airports.
Right.
So there's a way of regulating the priority of access to a good and service. There's kind of this unwritten rule in Western civilization of first come, first served. And if you have a single server and you have no way of physically managing or numerically managing access to that scarce good, then people may begin to push and shove to get in. My understanding is that the glass doors in question were that people were pushing up against them. And this sometimes happens when people are trying to get out of a building that is either on fire or where an alarm is sounded that there's a fire in the building and there's not sufficient room for everybody to get out of the same portal through which they entered. And so you get a physical crush of people trying to get through. But all of this could have been prevented by any number of, at least two or three solutions that readily come to mind. At my university, I know for many years students have had to queue up for 24 hours or more to get scarce tickets to football or basketball games. Sometimes they have a sign-up list. Everybody gets a number, and periodically they check off the number through a 24-hour, 12-hour period of time to make certain that some kind of order is maintained.
Exactly.
Or you could give people a chit with a number on it, and that would guarantee their place in line. So there are ways of imposing order on these kinds of situations.
What is it, Clark, about people where they've got to rush to buy something, or they've got to rush to get into a soccer game or to get out of it? What is it about the human psyche that does that?
Well, I don't know if I would quite characterize it that way in terms of the human psyche. I think human beings are, most of the time, we are purposive actors. That is, we have goals, we have objectives, and we adjust our actions to the situations in which we find ourselves that either provide us access to that, opportunities for that, or obstacles to that. And if there are two or more people trying to achieve the same objective, they can get in one another's way. And I'm sure that people's unique kinds of experiences or learning histories may prepare them differently for the kinds of adjustments that they make. Some people may step back and say, after you, or they may say, I was here first. Don't try to crowd in front of me. And there have been studies of queuing behavior in which both of those kinds of things take place. So, again, I'm not willing to put all of the blame for this tragedy that occurred at this particular Walmart if what I read in the newspaper is an accurate account. I think that the people who were offering the good or service in question bear equal responsibility or culpability for what took place because they could have managed it better and managed it differently.
Now, the suit alleges that the temporary worker's death resulted from the carelessness, recklessness, wanton disregard for public safety, and gross negligence of the defendants in the staging, conducting, and advertising for sales events. Man, what a story. Imagine this. You're on a plane. It gets diverted. That happens sometimes. But then you sit on the runway for 9 hours. 9 hours. And normally a flight from San Salvador to Los Angeles takes about 4.5 hours. But on Sunday, a TACA International Airlines flight took nearly 14 hours. 9 of them spent on the ground as passengers clambered for relief, going crazy. Dense fog forced Flight 670 en route to Los Angeles International Airport to be diverted to the Ontario International Airport, where it sat on the tarmac until mid-morning. Just why the passengers were forced to wait for so long on the cramped aircraft remained a matter of dispute. According to the air carrier, authorities at the Ontario Airport did not allow the plane's 193 passengers to disembark. Local authorities, according to the TACA statement, did not want passengers to pass through customs and enter the country. Airport officials, however, gave a different story. According to a statement from the Los Angeles World Airports, which operates the Ontario facility, TACA never asked that the passengers be allowed to exit the craft. Lawmakers from both ends of the political spectrum are revolting against the Treasury Department's execution of the $700 billion financial industry bailout plan. After the first comprehensive report on the rescue package found that more oversight was needed, in response to the report released this week, House Republicans warned Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson and Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke that without greater accountability, just what we've been talking about in this program, Congress will be in no mood to release the Treasury the second half of the $700 billion. They want accountability. We deserve it. A top executive of Chrysler cautioned that a carmaker collapse could send the economy spiraling into a depression as the UAW union braced for contract concessions as well. Chrysler's vice chairman, Jim Press, said the U.S. automakers were down to months left as industry officials ratcheted up a fierce lobbying push to persuade Congress to approve as much as $34 billion in emergency aid. Now, that's up from the $25 billion that they had asked for 2 weeks ago. Catherine Austin Fitz will be with us in a moment as we'll talk about this situation. Even with the bailout, does that mean that the auto industry in the United States will survive? Will people buy their cars? A national poll suggests that 6 in 10 Americans oppose using your money to help the ailing major U.S. auto companies. 61% of those questioned in a CNN Opinion Research Corporation poll said they're dead set against the federal government providing billions of dollars in assistance. 36% favor such a bailout. If you go up to the coasttocoastam.com website, why don't you take a look at the flying new reptile species found, a new fossil species of flying reptile with a wingspan the size of a family car has been uncovered by scientists. A researcher has identified the new type of pterosaur, the largest of its kind ever to be discovered. It flew the skies above Brazil, they say, 115 million years ago. It had a wingspan of 16.4 feet. And was a little taller than 3 feet tall. Also on the coasttocoastam.com website, the strange story of villagers flocking to see a stone flower. Villagers in China are flocking to see a giant stone flower, which they believe appeared in the woods after heavy rainfall. It's a really strange-looking picture. You might want to go take a look at it. Up next, Catherine Austin Fitz. Maybe she can shed some light for us on these strange economic stories. She's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, here she is, Catherine Austin Fitz. She once served as the Assistant Secretary of Housing at the HUD in the first Bush administration, and also heads up a company called Solari and also financialpermaculture.com. She does some work there as well. She's back. Hey, Catherine, how are you?
Good evening, George.
Might as well put in an office in the network for you because you've been on so much lately.
Well, it's my favorite radio show.
Well, let me tell you, Catherine, as we've all been saying over the past several weeks now, no accountability. Now, it looks like some of the Republicans in Congress have woken up and they're saying, we're not going to release the rest of the $300+ billion until we get more accountability here. What do you think's going on?
Well, it's hard to say. The Treasury and the Fed have been very silent about letting out information. Bloomberg has a lawsuit against the Fed to try and demand transparency about the collateral the Fed has been taking on the loans. So there's been extraordinary money and support going into bailing out Fannie, Freddie, and the financial institutions of the bank, and very little information about where the money's going. So I think you're seeing a real breakdown of trust and a huge amount of money flying around without many questions asked. Now, my suspicion, George, is that the Fed and Treasury are probably trying to protect financial liquidity by not letting on how bad the collateral is they're taking and how bad things are. So they're trying to keep confidence up by really protecting the market from understanding the level of significant fraud and problems behind the scenes.
That's a strong possibility, Catherine. Also, in addition to that, what about the possibility that it's a good old boys network and they're helping out their own friends and they just don't want anybody to know about some of the improprieties here?
Well, certainly that's going on, too. I mean, certainly that's going on, too. And my question is, you know, what deals have been made behind the scenes to pay off whom for what? And so I think we're grappling in a situation where there's trillions of dollars flying and very little information that we can trust about what's going on.
Well, but you know what? We've been saying this. No accountability. We don't trust them. Americans have lost faith in this entire situation, and here it is. Now even Congress is losing faith. It's unbelievable.
Well, when you think about it, when you're watching a stock market that'll fly up and down 400, 500, 600 points a day, in ways that make no sense. Everybody knows you're watching an economic warfare battleground. You're not watching a market. So I think, yes, I think that there's tremendous confidence that's been lost.
Catherine, I'm from Detroit. My father worked for Ford Motor Company all his life. You know, he retired from Ford Motor Company. I think we need to do whatever we can do to save the automobile industry in terms of competitiveness. I've got some concerns, too, about this now $34 billion loan package. My problem with all this is where are the guarantees that they are going to market cars and develop product that the American consumers will buy? I haven't heard anything about that. All I hear is we might break even in a year. We might need the cash. We may not have to touch the cash. This is from the three collectively and separately as well. But I haven't seen the plan for what are we going to produce to get the American consumer to buy our products. Where is it?
I don't know. Presumably, they're going to put forward plans, so I don't think we've seen them yet. I will say this, George, because I'm very skeptical about bailouts across the board.
Yes.
But once you start giving bailouts to the least productive sector in America, if you don't, I mean, we're giving huge bailouts to the unreal economy. We know we've had reports that Wall Street is going to pay out $70 billion in bonuses this year. So if you look at the numbers, we have two of the auto companies asking for $15 billion of bailouts, Ford saying maybe they want to stand by a line of $9 billion. But let's just talk about the $15 billion. The $15 billion is only about 25% of Wall Street bonuses. So, in fact, this is a relatively small amount of money when you look at how much money's been thrown down the Wall Street hole, including the amount that's going to pay for Wall Street bonuses.
Isn't this, though, only prolonging the agony?
Not necessarily. It really depends on their plans, because what has happened is we've bubbled the economy, and now that bubble has paused, and what you're watching is organizations all around the world face a cash flow that's falling off the cliff. So depending on what their plans are, no, not necessarily. But remember, if you are in an economy where you're bailing out some sectors and not others, the bad money is going to crowd out the good, and you're going to give significant power to certain industries up against others. So my concern is these guys relatively are asking for tiny money relative to what Wall Street is getting, and they do provide a real economy and an invaluable infrastructure, and it would be dangerous to just let that infrastructure hit a wall. When you look at the costs that the government could face with pension funds, health care, and other sort of as bankruptcies cycled through the economy. So I think the story is more complicated once we start giving the kind of bailouts we've been giving.
So you're saying give them the loans?
What I would do if I was President-elect Obama is I would look seriously at what the economic value is here and what will happen if you do or you don't. And then the question would be, I think, probably what's the best plan to invest in, and do it as an investor. But if you're going to pump this much money into the banks and not pump it into the real economy, that combination is a lethal one. My concern looking at the polls, because we just had a poll come out recently today saying that 61% of Americans oppose a bailout.
That's right.
I would hate to see America's anger at the banks and the financial sector get taken out on the real economy in this way. So I think this one is more muddled, and I'm not enthusiastic about bailouts across the board, but if you're going to put, $8 trillion into Wall Street, then I think it's worth considering doing something for the auto industry.
Of course, the airlines are next.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, they're going to be right around the corner. That hasn't really been reported yet, but it's going to happen.
There's no doubt we need to downsize across the board, George, because if we're not going to have any middle class, then we don't need corporations to make things for the middle class.
Well, here's the other problem with the auto loans and the bailouts. Why don't they simply declare bankruptcy, which they can do by law, clean up their balance sheet, and then get the money lent to them, with fresh capital?
That may be a possibility, and I don't know enough about what their financials would look like in a bankruptcy versus a not bankruptcy. The question is, how do you get from where we are today to a sustainable auto industry? And the big question, George, is not the auto industry, but I go back to the people. If we're not going to have a middle class, then we don't need corporations to make consumer goods for the middle class. And so there's no point in bailing out, the corporations that make consumer goods if we're not going to build an economy that really supports having people who have financial security and the well-being to buy a car.
I mean, I think Congress should say, all right, we want guarantees that we're going to have hybrid cars, electric cars in place.
Oh, I agree. I agree completely. If you look at the innovations that are possible and are happening with car companies around the world, we're behind the innovation curve. And so, absolutely, if we're going to invest in the auto industry, we need our auto industry to get with the 21st century.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to take phone calls when we come back in just a moment, Catherine. But I'd like to ask you, when you call into Catherine Austin Fitz, in addition to any questions you might have, because of this poll that just came out that 61% of you are opposed to the bailout for the automobile industry, before you ask the question, you just tell us yes or no if you're opposed to it or not and why, and then we'll go into your questions with Catherine Austin Fitz. What's new with you? What are you doing? You're still helping out some emerging industries, I hear.
Yeah, well, one of the ones we have on our blog, I'm promoting mint oil for Christmas.
Mint oil?
Mint oil for Christmas. There's the oldest organic mint farm in the country is Crosby Mint Farm, George. And about a month ago, they are having their lender foreclose on them in a horrible story. They were late in one payment. The lender accelerated on their loans. They have mint oil in excess of all their total outstanding loans, so it's a ridiculous situation to get foreclosed on. And so they started to accelerate sales of their mint oil, and I ordered some, and it finally came in 2 weeks ago, and I loved it. It was fantastic.
Mint oil.
I've been giving it to everybody. So go to my blog and check out at solari.com/blog. Check out the mint oil and save the oldest organic mint farm from being foreclosed on.
Interesting. Save them. They should get a bailout. We'll be back in a moment with your questions with Catherine Austin Fitz on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, two-parter with Stephen Quayle. The first half of the program tonight, we'll talk with him about world tensions and then his latest research on giants. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie with Catherine Austin Fitz and the rest of your calls. But Catherine, when does any of this end? I don't see it ending at all, do you?
Normally it ends after you have what's called a mark-to-market, when everything marks down to a level where economic activity can begin again. And the challenge, George, is that a lot of what we're watching is not the natural cycle of an economy. Rather, it's a breakdown in trust that relates to criminality and lawlessness. So that's the big question. How do you deal with the corruption? And of course, as you and I have talked a lot on Coast to Coast, that corruption really isn't just criminality itself. It's a group of people who are reengineering how governance works, not just in the United States and globally. So, you know, this is a group with an agenda. They're going someplace, and that's why I call it a financial coup d'etat. So the question is, what can the rest of us do about it? And we can do a lot, but first we have to see the game.
Okay, now to the phones we go. Let's go to Crawford, Colorado, west of the Rockies. David, you're on with Catherine Austin Fitz on Coast.
Hi.
Go ahead, David.
Hi, George.
Hello.
Catherine, you said
David.
You said it right there. I haven't voted in a while. I voted for Reagan the last time. I kind of lost faith, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so, George, would know. I do respect the commander.
Now, you're voting in your local elections, right, because they're important.
I do those, but I haven't voted for president.
Okay.
But like, to say what George said, I will defend the commander-in-chief no matter who it is. And
right.
I'll serve again if they'll let me.
Right.
The question I got for you is that the way this vote went, this demand for change, this move for change,
uh-huh.
It wasn't just a vote. It was America demanding. Do you think that our government really took to heart the fact that we are really demanding a change? And you think that change will come? Because the way things are going, like you said, this whole thing about trust, I lost faith in them a long time ago. And when Barack showed up, and I'll tell you, I voted for Barack, I saw an opportunity for maybe for truth to prevail, you know, and faith to prevail in the sense in our faith in my government. But sometimes I think, just like you said, I've lost trust. You know, I don't believe they took it to heart that America spoke, and we didn't just vote, we demanded. If they don't do that, where do we go next as people?
Well, what we have to do is, if we want change, because remember, the government is really controlled from behind the scenes by private financial interests.
Truly.
If we want change, it's not enough to vote for changes in Congress or in the administration. We also have to vote for change in the marketplace. So we have to start enforcing the rule that says, if you behave unethically, we will not support you. So in the marketplace, whether it's our bank deposits, our investments, it's our purchases, we have to start exercising discretion and create as many degrees of separation between ourselves and the and people who we might transact with who do not behave ethically. So the move to ethical behavior is going to have to come bottom up, not just in our own behavior day to day, but in as represented by our transactions and our investment of time and admiration. So this is going to have to come bottom up, and it's not enough to implement it in government. We've got to implement it in the marketplace as well.
Okay, great. Let's go next. First-time caller, Frank in Nashville. Go ahead, Frank.
Gemini George, you're the most gracious man on the radio. Thank you. To answer your first question, I'm a Democrat, Obama voter. I'm dead set against the bailout. But my question for Catherine is, why don't we take $35 billion off of that bonus deal and give it to the automobile companies.
I couldn't agree more. I think if Wall Street gets a dollar this year in bonuses, it's much too much. In fact, I think they ought to give back to the American people the bonuses they've received in prior years. So I think that's a much – reinventing our auto industry is a much better use of that money than bonuses for Wall Street. So I couldn't agree more.
That's the thrust of my question. And the other thing that I find odd here in Nashville is all the bills that I look at, when I look at the dates on them, I looked at a $100 bill printed in 1999. I suspect the money's not being circulated. I don't have any new bills.
I couldn't agree with you more, because the money is going to cover old positions. It's not getting circulated. The interlending market is frozen. But at the same time, I would say that Americans don't need more debt. They don't need to be able to borrow more money. They need more income, and they need lower expenses.
Thank you, George. Peace and love to you and everybody.
All right, you got it. Next up, hello there, Michael in Oregon. You're on with us. Go ahead, Michael. Are you with us, Michael?
Is this the wild card line?
It sure is.
Okay. Thank you, George and Catherine. Thank you so much. You are doing far more to serve us than our own legislators and congresspeople are. Thank you so much. What I want to know, Catherine, is why is it that it's such a taboo to talk about the quality of American cars? I mean, I've had two of them, and I've actually just taken it in the shorts on the cost of maintaining them, and I'm constantly taking friends to service their American cars. And yet I drive around a Japanese car with 185,000 miles and not a thing wrong with it. Why is it so taboo to talk about that as part of the problem with the auto industry?
Oh, I don't think it is taboo. I mean, that hasn't been my experience, but I think we ought to talk about it. I think we ought to talk about it. We've got in the auto industry, we've got tremendous infrastructure. And so it's important whatever happens to that infrastructure, it's managed, you know, whether it's a bankruptcy or a bailout, whatever we do, it's managed in a way that uses that infrastructure as well as possible. But certainly, as George said, it needs to innovate, because it has not innovated to the extent or performed to the extent that the Japanese or now other car companies around the world is. And so it either needs to get with the 21st century or to shut down.
Yeah, and the innovation is just lacking. And you know, I would be in favor of a loan if they could show us something for the future.
Right. And part of it, George, is there's tremendous changes that have happened in information technology that have not gotten integrated into the cars. It's almost as though you'd like to see a car company run by Silicon Valley to see what they could create. We've seen Tata Motors in India coming out with cars priced, the Tata Nano is priced at $2,500. So we've seen tremendous innovation around the world that we could have here.
Maybe we need flying cars, Catherine. What do you think?
I'd love a flying car, George.
We'll get him to work with Paul Mueller and his company, and who knows. Williamsport, uh-huh. Pennsylvania. John, you're on the air with us. Go ahead, John.
Hi, George. Hi, Catherine. How are you?
Hi.
I had just a brief question. I wanted to first say that I oppose the bailout, simply because if the government is going to give the auto companies $34 billion, doesn't it just seem as though such a short-term fix where, you know, in a month or so, they'll just go right through it again? To me, I say, wouldn't it be more sensible just to let them have the bankruptcy and do a Chapter 11 where they're forced to reorganize? I mean, this is, to me, just seems kind of like beating a dead horse.
It might be. The question is, if you're going to bail out the financial industry in this kind, with this kind of lavishness, and then you don't complement it with what you're doing in the real economy, you could really you could make things worse. So I agree with you. I'm opposed to bailouts. The problem is, if you have partial bailouts of the financial industry and don't support the real economy, and you do so in a way that could be really devastating to labor, because one of the things we need to face is if we have a Chapter 11, we could end up completely devastating a very big pension fund or a group of pension funds, and that cost is going to come into government in a very big way.
What about a loan guarantee, Catherine? What if, you know, we
well,
go to these banks?
Well, that's, of course, what we did with Chrysler.
A long time ago, when Iacocca was running.
We could do a loan guarantee and take a piece of the equity for the government investment that could be very profitable if it was combined with a radical reengineering to something much more innovative.
And force the banks that we've given all this money to lend the money to them.
Right. Exactly.
How come they don't think of this?
I think they do think of this. I think they do think of this.
Well, but they don't do anything with it. That's probably the more logical plan.
Right. Well, I think what we're watching is posturing over who's going to get the equity out of all of it. Because at the end of the day, you know, the stocks are down tremendously from their high. General Motors
they're huge,
is trading at $4.90. And so if you can buy into a plan where you buy the stock at $4.90 and radically reengineer it, it could be a very good investment.
Absolutely. A couple of weeks ago, it was a good investment. You almost could have doubled your money then.
Right.
Let's go to Vic in Carlsbad, California, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Victor.
Hi, great. I'm kind of for the auto bailout because it's the real economy. We're helping a real manufacturing company. But I'm very much against these bank bailouts because they're not lending the money, and we're giving this money to the companies that did the great fraud in the first place.
I'm with you.
and how about giving every American, maybe a middle class or lower class, a $30,000 check? Maybe that would cost $300 billion for one-tenth the cost of the other bailouts. We could have a booming economy. Why don't we do that? Give Americans a check.
Well, I think if you're going
to have to spend.
Right. I think if you're going to hyperinflate, what I would love to see is a debt cancellation program along the lines that you're describing. Because if you're going to hyperinflate, then I think you've got to do it across the board and not just hyperinflate on behalf of the perpetrators.
You mean a debt cancellation for citizens?
Yes.
And it would not affect their credit rating?
It would not affect their credit rating.
That's not a bad idea at all. So let's say I've got $10,000 in credit card debt. And it's 30 that they give us. I could call up my credit card companies and say, I'm taking advantage of this, wipe the slate clean. Or something
right.
like that?
Right. Yes. No? But in instances where there have been fraudulent inducement, you literally mark down or wipe off the debt. So, yes, I think a debt jubilee. You know, there's a history in the Bible, George, of every, you know, what is it, every 50 years you cancel all the debt?
Yeah.
But
I
think we're looking at the need globally for a debt jubilee.
Well, that's an innovative program, Catherine. I wish somebody would come up with something like that. And that credit card company, let's say, that wiped the slate clean, would have to still keep you as a client, or are they going to take their card away?
I think they might be able to take their card away, George.
Yeah, okay. Well, then it's really not a giveaway, is it?
No.
First, let's go to Mike driving around in Louisiana, first-time caller. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Well, I'm for the bailout for the auto workers, and the only reason I'm for it is because they gave all that money to IGA, and what they're asking for is just one quarter of what they gave IGA. Why didn't they look at IGA and say, y'all go file bankruptcy?
That's a good question.
That's an excellent
question. To me, it's like, you know the reason why, George? Is because the auto workers are union. They're wanting to get rid of the union employees. I'm a union man. When I first came to work with the company I'm with, I'm a Teamster, I looked at the supervisor that's signing me up. I looked at him, and he gave me this sheet to fill out, and he said, this is for the union. I said, I don't want to be in the union. I said, I do my job. I don't need to be in your union. He looked at me, and he said, you don't want to work for this company without being in the union. Trust me. And this is a supervisor now, management employee. And I signed up for that union, and 6 months after being with this company, I realized, thank goodness I signed up with the union. I know what the guy's talking about. But they keep saying, you know, the auto workers are $70 an hour. All right, I work an average of 52 hours a week with my company. I'm not even going to make $80,000 this year, okay? Now, I can promise you those AGI or IAG, whatever it is, I can promise you, those employees are going to make a lot more than $80,000.
You know, I was. You're going to love this, Mike. I was watching a soccer match with a buddy of mine last week, and he loves soccer coming from Europe. Loves it. And, Catherine, out comes the team that he is rooting for.
Uh-huh.
And they're wearing AIG-sponsored shirts.
Oh, no.
And I said, you've got to be kidding me. And he said, and they've announced they're going to sponsor next year, too. Now, can you believe that?
See, that's our money.
Yep.
That's our money. And I agree. I think the history of labor in this country has proven that unions add tremendous value to the country and the economy. I think we do not want to see a world without unions. And my concern is that part of what we're watching is a union and labor busting exercise that's going to work in the long run, George, to our disadvantage. So I think union has to be at the table. And if we're gonna give Wall Street investment bankers $70 billion of income and bonuses and AIG enough money to go to spas and you know buy T-shirts for sport teams, then we've got to make sure that we're consistent with how we treat the real economy and labor in this formula. So. I think you know, if we're going to give $70 billion for Wall Street bonuses, then it's time to consider making an investment in the real economy and the auto industry.
Time for a few more calls. That's at Madisonville, Kentucky. Hey, James, go ahead.
Hey, how y'all doing tonight?
Hey, James.
I'm pretty naive when it comes to all this, and I really don't know which way to vote for the big three, but all my life, I have heard that the oil companies and the big three have been in cahoots together. And there's been several people that have made carburetors and engines that get 100 miles to the gallon. And I was wondering, why doesn't ExxonMobil, with all their profits, this $4 gasoline, why don't they bail the big three out?
I think that's an excellent idea.
I haven't heard that one yet, so I just wanted to bounce that off of y'all.
I think that's an excellent idea.
All right, Nan, your turn. Go for it. Hi, Nan.
Hi, Catherine and George.
Hey.
I just wanted to say that you two are my very favorite, and I've eliminated all of my news sources down to two, you and C-SPAN. So I wanted to say I'm for the bailout only because, to me, it seems like the head of the criminal beast is the Federal Reserve and the Treasury, and if they're for it, then I suppose I'm, or if they're against it, then I'm for it. because every day I think I understand what the game is, and the next day I realize that I haven't the slightest idea what the game is. But Catherine, I have a question.
Okay.
What does the Federal Reserve and Treasury, what do they gain by eliminating the middle class? What is their gain from all of this?
Well, I think they can achieve a more sustainable economy faster if most people are poor. When you're poor, you have a smaller economic footprint and you're easier to control. So I think they're looking for very tight central control and governance. And that's much easier to achieve if people are poor and don't have resources. So, and I think part of it is not just a long-term goal of a smaller population and an easier population to manage, but they can always settle their disagreements by agreeing to steal from the rest of us. So I think part of it is that, you know, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely is what we're watching.
Catherine, until next time, my dear.
Thanks, George. Have a wonderful evening.
You too. Catherine Austin Fitz always provides a great insight, does she not? I'll be back in a moment. Two-parter now with Stephen Quayle right around the corner. Get ready for this Coast to Coast ride. I'm George Norrie. See you in a moment.